President Obama sent a clear message on his first ever visit to Israel as president, saying the U.S. is Israel's greatest friend and ally. But in perhaps another symbol, his limo broke down. Metaphor? The president will be addressing the stalled peace process, Iran's nuclear program, Syria. But maybe he'll be talking with a more receptive audience. Israel has a new coalition government formed without the Jewish ultra-Orthodox parties, which have had such an influence despite their small number. The new coalition does include three-term but less powerful Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his Likud party, as well as the secular left-leaning Yesh Atid and the more conservative Jewish Home Party. Aaron Miller is a vice president and distinguished scholar at the Woodrow Wilson International Center. He served as a Middle East advisor to Republican and Democratic secretaries of state from 1980 to 2003. Aaron, many of us remember Netanyahu appearing to lecture President Obama in Washington in 2011. You say this trip may not fix that cold relationship, but what can it fix?
Reality is this is a trip designed to take care of old business and to start determining whether or not they, the president and Prime Minister Netanyahu, can do some new business together. The fact is they have the most dysfunctional relationship of any two Israeli prime ministers and American presidents, I think, in the history of the relationship. And what saved other Israeli prime ministers and American presidents was some sort of common enterprise. And what I'm predicting is that either Iran or the Israeli-Palestinian issue is going to emerge in a way that is going to force these two to want to cooperate with one another. So this trip isn't going to fix the dysfunction, but it is going to begin, I think, to create a new basis for cooperation. Now, one other point. The president also has an Israel problem in the sense that he's perceived by great numbers of Israelis and clearly many in the pro-Israeli community in the United States as being somewhat detached and disconnected. And I think he will use this trip to push every symbolic button he can and to create a kind of a more intuitive emotional relationship with the Israeli public. So I think this is an important trip, though it's not one that's going to pay immediate dividends.
Do you think that perception of the president by many on the right here in the U.S. is accurate?
He is much different, let's be clear, than his immediate predecessors. I mean, Bill Clinton, frankly, was in love with the idea of Israel. He wrote in his memoirs that he loved Yitzhak Rabin, then Israeli prime minister, assassinated Israeli prime minister, more than he had loved another man, which is an extraordinary statement for any American president. And George W. Bush actually was, to some degree, enthralled with Sharon the warrior, the Sharon the founder. That is not the case with Obama. He's of a different generation. He was born in 1961. He was 6 years old at the time of the 1967 war when much of the pro-Israeli sentiment and tropes were generated both among non-Jewish politicians and Americans in the United States and, of course, the Jewish community. He missed all that. So he didn't get the front end of that. He got the back end, the other results of 1967, the occupation, Israel's conflict and confrontation with the Palestinians. So he doesn't have that intuitive sense of projecting this bond. And he's got to do some of that, and he will.
Well, and his supporters and those who agree with his attitude and stance might say that it's about time that an American president was potentially less sympathetic to Israel. I mean, you know, he might have people backing him on that, but it also might be a less sympathetic leader in Israel. Let's talk about Netanyahu. Has built several new settlements in the territories, and we're now reading about a new form of Israeli settlement in Arab East Jerusalem, not an isolated village surrounded by barbed wire, but apartment buildings in the middle of what the Palestinians hope will be their capital. How sticky is that wicket?
Every Israeli prime minister, no matter how dovish. Example, 1993 to 2000, the most productive years of the Arab-Israeli peace process, with a couple very pragmatic, practical Israeli prime ministers, including, well, three, I mean, Rabin, Peres, and Barak. You had the settler population of the West Bank double. So this isn't just a function of Netanyahu, although his sense of timing and inability to understand what is going to anger an American president seems to go beyond some of his predecessors. This issue of settlement activity on the Israeli side is probably the single greatest obstacle that the peace process will confront. It's going to continue to be a problem because no Israeli prime minister in these circumstances, and none ever have agreed to a comprehensive freeze in settlement activity. And this is one of the reasons President Obama got himself off on not just a sticky wicket, but the wrong wicket in 2009 and 2010 when he tried to push for such a freeze. He's not going to get one. There's another point that needs to be made. All successful American mediators, Kissinger, Carter, and Baker, the three most successful, all fought with the Israelis. But the fights they had with Israel were productive. So the issue is not whether an American president is going to have tension with an Israeli prime minister. It's whether or not the issue around which the fight is taking place is the right one. And frankly, if he's going to have a fight with the Israelis, not now, but I suspect he will, it will be over the terms of what constitutes a broader political agreement between Israelis and Palestinians over Jerusalem, borders, security, refugees. That's the struggle, frankly, worth having.
Meanwhile, if there's criticism of President Obama when it comes to his relations with Israel, what's the impact on Netanyahu of the recent votes by the Israeli people that, first of all, have kept the ultra-Orthodox out of power? And not only that, the parties that were elected have vowed to end certain privileges for the ultra-Orthodox. They have exemptions from serving in the army or grants for religious schools. How does that shift in Israel impact Netanyahu's power?
The reality is you have a generational shift in Israel. These two upstart parties, both of which don't have a whole lot of battle-tested experience in Israeli politics, constitute a significant bloc that wants to reset or refocus the Israeli agenda away from the peace process for sure and towards social and economic issues, income asymmetry, housing shortages, quality of life, the issue of burden sharing, that is to say, what role will the Orthodox community play bearing their fair share of the burden in national service? And this, to a degree, marginalizes a prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, who frankly strengths have been national security and foreign policy issues. So it's not that security is going away. It's just that you have more Israelis interested now in, frankly, like the United States, trying to repair their own broken house rather than putting a whole lot of energy and attention onto the security front. Now, that security front is going to continue to remain a critically salient issue, and it's going to be back, particularly on the issue of Iran. But one of the paradoxes, I believe, is that Netanyahu, in a way, needs President Obama more than ever, because if, in fact, he's to maintain his relevance, his saliency in Israeli politics, he's going to have to focus on security issues, let's say Iran, and he's going to need an American partner in order to succeed.
That's Aaron David Miller, Vice President and Distinguished Scholar at the Woodrow Wilson International Center and former advisor for both Republican and Democratic Secretaries of State on the Middle East. Aaron, thanks as always.
Pleasure, Robin.